please help me welcome our speaker tonight, Chris B. from the Philly Big Book Meeting.
Hi, my name's Chris Brennan. I'm a recovered alcoholic. Hi, everybody. Good to be out here in the middle of nowhere. I haven't been here in a while. I spoke here a few times over the years. My sobriety date is 3/3/94. Or whatever that'll do for you. Somebody's proud of me somewhere, I'm sure. Somebody in my family's got to be. It's great to see some friends of mine. Dave, I've known for years, and Phil, and Paulie, wherever he is. A lot of faces I don't know, which is good, because sometimes you go into a spot and you know everybody for so long. I've been doing this for a while, that it's great to carry the message, hopefully, to some people who haven't heard it before. Or maybe I'll say something that other people have been telling you, and you'll hear it in a different way. That's kind of the way this thing works sometimes, right? I live in a little town called Riverton, New Jersey, which is a little tiny town right across from Northeast Philly. If you're familiar with the Stepping Stones Clubhouse, that's where I got sober at in 94. I've been over there about 15 years, but I am a Philly boy by heart, born and raised 57th and Elmwood, Southwest Philadelphia, about 5 minutes away, hi Ed, from where Will Smith was talking about in that song, right? I'm the Fresh Prince, apparently, right, before he was. And I just love, hi, Frankie's coming in. Well, look, we got everybody here. Whenever I speak, I look back, I've been sober a while, and I really, after all these years, I don't know if there's anything really about my childhood, my upbringing, any of that stuff, that really has anything to do with me being an alcoholic. I know we love to talk about that and look for that, and you gotta do something, right? You gotta talk about something for an hour. But we tend to dwell on that. I think from the way I understand it, I believe there's three things that gotta happen. All three happened for me. I think you gotta inherit it. I inherited it from my father, James C. Brennan, Corporal James C. Brennan, right, U.S. Marines. And I think you gotta activate it at some point. I activated it in 1976 in a playground down in Southwest Philly when I drank something called Tequila Sunrise. Up to that point, I've been a shy, I don't know if you want to say introverted kid. I played a lot of sports, and in my mind I was normal. But I don't know, maybe I'm a little vertically challenged. I'm not as tall in real life as I like to think, and maybe that had something to do with it, or maybe because my name began with B, and in Catholic school I always had to sit in the front. But I felt like I was a little overly self-conscious. But I'll tell you what, one shot of that Tequila Sunrise, bam! All that went away, and I had no idea what I was in for. I was 6'2", 220 immediately, played four or five pro sports. I could have played if it had things broke my way a little bit. I could sing and dance. I'm Dean Martin, Sinatra, Freud, Einstein, all rolled into one. And I didn't know that other people didn't get that effect necessarily from alcohol. Bill Wilson called it the magic elixir. What a great description, right? Now, I didn't know this at the time either. All I knew is something happened, and I felt like a different person. I had finally arrived, the real me, right? This is the person I've been looking for. I was trapped in somebody else's body, whatever, up to that point. So you gotta activate it, and then you gotta feed it. And for the next 15 years, whatever, I fed it daily. I'm a child of the 70s, so my drink bone's connected to my drug bone. I hope that doesn't offend anybody. I don't think it will, looking around. right? It's funny, but... And I'm like the original garbage head. I was never afraid of that kind of stuff. I was a good Catholic kid, but... You know, as it turns out, I'll take whatever you got. And more, you know, just, and from an early age, just off to the races. Started out drinking, got sick as a dog, right? But what it did for me, you know, Sandy, I think Sandy B used to always say, you wake up the next morning after your first drunk, and I'm sick as a dog and all that. If you were normal at all, if you didn't have alcoholism, you would say, man, that was something, but I'm never doing that again. And I'll tell you what, I couldn't wait to do that again. I'll pay that price if it does that for me. I didn't have words for all this back then. I was just some kid on the corner, like everybody else, trying to fit in, making up stories. That's all I ever wanted to do, was fit in. You know what I mean? I come from a good family. I learned at a young age, drinking means, Bill uses a word, conviviality, whatever the hell that means. There's a Scrabble word for you, right? What it means is, growing up, watching aunts and uncles come over, they start drinking, I'm upstairs listening, that sounds like fun. I didn't really notice the after effects sometimes, later on to the evening, some words said, maybe some fights. And this is just between my family members, right? But I'm Irish Catholic, and that's just the way it was. And I loved it. What people don't know, I come from oil money. My father worked 42 years shift work at the Arco Oil Refinery in right by Eddie down there in South Philadelphia. Every man I ever knew in my life worked there. My every uncle, my grandfather, I think even my great-grandfather. I actually have, I don't know if, it might have been my great-grandfather. I should know this, but I have a, I didn't know this till a few years ago. I had heard a story that one of my uncles or somebody fell into one of the tanks down there. And here, they were out on a load. Who knew, right? Ominous warning, which I failed to heed. They were out on a load, and they couldn't find them, but they were known to kind of not be found at times. And they found them a couple days later. Those tanks were wooden back then. They made kerosene and things like that, not gasoline. And I'm going way back in the day. And they fell in there and died. So I don't think that would have slowed me down at all if I knew that story, but figured I'd share that with you, right? So what I'm trying to tell you is I just figured that when I'm old enough, I'll get a job at the Arco, at the oil refinery, and that was that. I didn't really, I test well. I could have been somebody. I could have been a contender. I did well in school. I graduated pretty high in my class, literally and figuratively, right? I think I graduated in the top 20 or 30, but I didn't want to be, I don't even know if I would call it smart. I didn't want to look that way. I felt that, you know what, do you know who I am? You know what I mean? I'm too cool. It's like, God forbid I got caught reading a book. Man, my dad, he was Philadelphia high school educated oil refiner his whole life. He was my hero. He seemed to know everything in the world about everything. Now, we didn't have Google back then. He could have been making stuff up, for all I know, but he would tell you it's because he loved to read. That's how he learned all this stuff. And he tried to pass it on to me so badly. And I just gave him the Heisman, right? Like, I don't read. Like, how much of an idiot you got to be to make that statement and be proud of it? I don't read. He'd be like, son, you do know how to read, right? I read a quote. I love the spiritual quotes. We've been talking about them on Facebook for years and all that stuff. I read a quote not too long ago, a couple years ago, that said, the man who refuses to read has no advantage on the man who can't. Think about that one, right? That was me, right? Held me back my whole life because I'm just too cool to do that, as if that was corny or something. And the irony is I've spent the last 26 and a half years studying a book, right? We do big book studies all over Philly, South Jersey. I'm sure I'm preaching to the choir to some extent in here. We've been doing it for years. I love it. That's AA to me. That's the 12 steps. That's step work to me, right? This is not step work if you're new. This is a meeting. It's nice. You're hearing a speaker. Maybe you'll like me, probably won't. But this is not step work. This is learning about the steps, talking about them, right? Step work is done in private. It was drilled into me years ago, and I thank God I had some good men that taught me that step work you're not going to know about. No Facebook posts. It's me and some dude usually on a bench somewhere in some strange town maybe, right? And me talking to them about this and about usually getting them over that mental block with God or something like that and getting them through the 12 steps. And I was told, you cannot replace that. I don't give a shit what else you do in AA. You can go to dances. You can fish. I don't care what you do. Go to dances, meetings, and that's great. There's nothing wrong with that. But that does not replace old-fashioned step work. One-on-one. Because on some level, eventually, I believe, it's me and God. And I don't know that God is that impressed that I'm sober, but I think if I'll ask God to work for me to help others, I think if there is a God, that impresses them. And I think you have to have that to know what I'm talking about, to feel this, to use terms like recovered. What's it say up there? We admitted we were powerless. Oh, that's written in past tense if you really look at it. What do they mean by that? Right? Because that's the way they felt. Because they didn't play around. There wasn't a lot of meetings, first of all. Wasn't a lot of travel. Really no telephones to speak of. All they knew was there's something about the spiritual. A famous doctor, Carl Jung, with a J. Looks funny. Looks like Jung. It's Jung, right? He's in the big book. He basically said to one of us, the guy, wrote, I don't know if you're familiar with the story, Roland Hazard, spent like a year with him. After a year! Could you imagine spending a year with the most expensive, famous doctor in the world? I don't know what that must have cost. He must have had out-of-network insurance or something. I don't know. Roland, but a year with the best doctor in the world, and he makes it from Zurich, Switzerland to Paris, France, they tell me, which is like 60, 90 miles. Not too far. And somebody asked him the wrong question. Hey, Roland, you want a drink? Yeah. Boom. Off to the races again. Goes back to Jung with his tail between his legs and says, I'll do anything. I believe in God. My family's got money. I'll do anything. And Jung, he's like an honorary founder of AA, Carl Jung. He should be on the Mount Rushmore if we ever make one, right? With Shoemaker and Buckman and some names that hopefully you guys and girls will learn over time. I was told to learn the history. That's another thing I thought was corny. That's not really my thing. The sponsor said, I don't give a shit what your thing is. Right? Learn it and teach others. Or how that you expect AA to survive. Get your head out of your you-know-what like usual. It's not my thing. If you ever uttered that statement, just think about that. Right? You're going to have to do a lot of things that aren't your thing if you're going to get better in here. Right? So, it's kind of funny, but it's just so true. So anyway, Jung says to him, listen, I tried. There's nothing I can do. People like you, in my opinion, are 100% hopeless apart from divine help. That's where that stuff came from. Number two. Right? And Roland kept, it's like, I'll do anything. He's like, all right, I'll tell you what. I can't tell you how to do it, but it's got to be spirituality at depth. Some kind of deep spiritual transformation or experience, right? He went on to explain alcohol is called a, when you go to buy it, what's it say on the sign? Wines and spirits? Because what's it do to me? You give me a shot of tequila sunrise, right? Bam. Is there anything, now they end up in AA at 34 years old. Is there anything else that'll do that for you when the emotions or life are on you? Drinking and drugs work, but you're allergic to it. Is there another spirit, wink, wink? Is that oversimplification? Right? Spirit versus spirit was Jung's formula. If you're allergic to one, you had better tap into the other. He said, that's all I can tell you. Good luck. I wish you well. And the guy came home. He started going to Oxford group meetings in New York. I don't think he ever joined AA that I know of. I'm not sure what kind of contact he had with Bill and them back in New York, but he had a spiritual experience. Part of that was they said, you got to give it away. And he gave it to another guy, Ebby, who is the guy in Bill's story, when 1934, when Bill's in his kitchen drinking, right? Not too long after the, I always found it helpful to put AA in historical context. I know, 1939, I know the big book rings a bell, and AA started in 1935. Well, go backwards. What happened in 1929? Stock market crash. That's a pretty well-known fact. And by the way, that's not a good thing. Bill lost all his money. I don't know about you, I lose all my money. I'm drinking, you know what I mean? This isn't going to end well. And the depression, prohibition, all that. So he's drinking bathtub gin, because they literally made it in the bathtub with dirty water. It's called small, in Bill's story where that doggerel where it says the guy caught his death drinking cold small beer. That's not Miller Nips. Small beer is they used water and over because they didn't have any money and they didn't have any purification. So they would, it was dirty water and they called it small beer and it could literally kill you if it was used too much. And, he's drinking so Bill's drinking gin and juice in his kitchen. You think Snoop Dogg, right, invented that? Bill is the original gin and juice guy. Bathtub gin cut with pineapple juice to make it drinkable. And this dude comes and tells him about this stuff that I'm talking about, that Young told him indirectly, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Right? You kidding me? Spirit versus spirit. I come from a good family. I can't blame them. I got two older sisters who seem normal as far as we know. I don't know that we technically ever had them tested or anything, but they, you know, 2.5 kids, picket fence, Volvo, and then there's me, the pride of the family at one point. I felt like after 12th grade, that was enough schooling. And college was kind of like, are you kidding me? I kind of in with the reading thing, right? Like, I've done enough schooling. And, I wanted to do a lot of things, but I didn't. And I accidentally, it was pure accident. I'm not qualified for it or anything. I don't even know that you could be, except to be alcoholic or drug addict. I accidentally got a job at Philadelphia Stock Exchange and worked on Wall Street for the next 12 years, 5 years off for bad behavior. Next thing you know, I'm sober and back there. So in and out the better part of 30 years on a trading floor of a stock exchange. So there is that theory that could be wrong with me too. I mean, it's where's Paulie at? He knows. It's a zoo, right? It's not normal. I loved it. It's the best place in the world. It was a breeding ground for alcoholism, drug addiction, gambling, sex, you name it. But it's not there anymore. This thing, and I forget what year, this thing called the internet came along. I think it's just a fad, at least I'm hoping, right? So anyway, we're hoping for that to go away. Anyway, that took away all the stock exchanges. I'm not bitter. I'm working it out in therapy. Don't worry. They tell me I'm doing good. And, so here I am, and I've been in the drug and alcohol dabbling treatment industry as if that's an industry and whatever. I don't even know what that is, but I just want to teach this. That's all I know. I feel like it's the only thing I could do in life that really has any teeth to it, that means anything. Right? I don't even like I love sports. I love fan. I got a couple fantasy leagues. I feel like I'm cheating if I'm not reading spiritual stuff. And the guy who didn't like to read, I had to pray for the discipline to read, and I talked to some people about it. They say, yeah, it's okay to do that. It's actually a big part of spirituality. You know, I mean, how can you get better if you're not going to feed your head? I remember a guy, I don't know if you know if it was an AA speaker or somebody local. I remember the first time I heard somebody say something to the effect of, how's your mental diet, kid? It's like, what? Bad enough with my physical diet, right? How's your mental diet? He's like, what are you reading? I don't read. He's like, well, how Are you planning on learning and getting better? I didn't think it through that much. You mean you have to? Suppose so. Like how are you going to get spiritual information if you're not going to put yourself around it somehow? Now, you don't have to read. There's books on tape. You can meet people when I'm working with guys. That's all a form of that, right? But if you're not going to expose, the famous writer C.S. Lewis said, he was a famous atheist. I don't know if you know his story, but he had this big transformation, and he wrote extensively about it. And he basically, one of the things he said is, most people are brought to spirituality not by argument for it, but by exposure to it. Put yourself around it. You know what you'll do? Change your mind, probably. Read a few books. There's an old saying, I forget who it was, the modern atheist can't be too careful about their reading, because you might read something that changes your mind. I'm such an idiot. My whole life. How did I even know? Right? And you tell me you got something, bam, 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 it's already inside you. Boom, what a sip. And I, you ain't fooling me. I know what you're talking about. Right? And I don't know if it's you, but there's something inherent in a lot of us that Bill Wilson says when they talked about things spiritual, he uses the word antagonized them. And I can relate to that. I don't know why. Nothing against God. I grew up Catholic. Perfectly fine. I wasn't mad at God. I didn't think he was overly mad at me for anything. I'm not an atheist, I found out. I'm just a lazy agnostic. I don't feel like thinking about it later. I feel like thinking about this now. And I had some good men that said, yeah, we know that, but it's time to answer that question. They said, don't worry about it. Everybody's got to answer it eventually, all humans. So we're going to do it now while you got a little bit fueling you, giving you a little willingness. Call it drug and alcohol addiction. And you're going to come to grips with that question, or you're going to get somebody else new to help you. I was like, all right, I guess. And I found, you know, this stuff is, also God doesn't make terms, you know, hard for those who seek them and stuff like that. But I never sought them. Like, sit around arguing about it. As if, look, I know a lot of meaningless stuff about a lot of meaningless stuff. Sports, abstract trivia, stupid stuff that I don't even know why I know. But even with my sponsor, he said, even an arrogant, self-obsessed, pick a couple adjectives if you like, talking about me, guy like you couldn't argue when it comes to spirituality, you know zero. And I couldn't even argue that. It's not the kind of thing you can fake. You can try, but some people are pretty slick, and you're gonna lose that. You're gonna be exposed very quickly. So I just like, all right, what do I do? You can learn it. Put yourself around it. Whether it's AA, there's a million spiritual books. some of the stuff I started.
Well, I know Bill and Bob and them were reading some stuff in that kitchen in Akron in 1935. Wonder what they were reading.
And I started reading some of that stuff. James Allen, Henry Drummond. Some of it's more religious than others, biblical stuff. But, you know, it is what it is. It's all basically talking about the same stuff. Right? Nobody knows if there's a God, and nobody knows if there isn't. You're wasting your time arguing that, right? But people like us, we better hope there's a God or we're going to die. So when I looked at it that way, it made it a lot more doable, right? I didn't find God because I necessarily believed in it. I found God because I was sold on the necessity, right? And also little things like I've been in charge of me my whole life, and how's that working out for you? Right? Hiring a new manager, step 3. Right? What do they do if you don't make the playoffs in a couple of years in sports? They fire the manager, usually fire the coach. Well, if you're sitting here tonight and you're new, or you're struggling, I'll bet you haven't made the playoffs of life in a couple of years. Fire the coach! And that would be you! So that's how you get better. Who knew? You can read self-help books till the cows come home. Or you can go in the mirror tonight and go, Chris, this is me talking to me. Chris, I gotta let you go. We're going in a different direction, don't worry. We're gonna give you a nice package and all that. But we're hiring new management. Right? And that, to me, is, it's kind of right in your face on some level. Look, self-help is great, but on some level, can't self-help kind of erase or negate any spiritual help you might be receiving? Because if you can help you, what do you need God for? So I started, man, these things wouldn't leave me alone. They still have for years. I love reading this stuff. How weird have I gotten that Mr. Me don't read too cool and everything like that, and now my favorite thing is like reading some spiritual book and talking to some dudes in AA about it. Are you kidding me? I mean, you talk about low, right? How far the mighty have fallen. I love that stuff, man. And I started at the Stock Exchange in 1979. That'll give you an idea of the math if you want to do that stuff. Right out of high school. And I did well for a couple of years. That's my problem. I always do well. I'm full of crap. I inherited that from my father, too. I can talk. You give me a book on space travel for a couple of weeks, I'll have to convince them I'm an astronaut. But I'm not. I can parrot and read stuff, and you'll think I know what I'm doing, but it's hollow. I'm not an astronaut. I can barely drive. Right? I'm not. And that's kind of like the 12 steps, right? You can know them, but it's hollow. Unless you're building it and feeding it. Step 11 with prayer and meditation and some kind of reading. Stuff that was completely foreign to me my whole life. And helping, and more important than that, helping other men and women get there. Sitting with them. I do as much as that, more now than I did even in the beginning maybe. I think there might be, the longer you stay sober, the more you need to do that as opposed to less. Because you almost, I don't know, maybe you start to think you're normal. I don't know what it is. But it's almost like the older you get, the more you better stay in touch with this stuff. But it's good for you. Don't worry about it. I did well, but I can never have enough money, as it turns out. I got that phone call that became regular a few years later. Chris, we love you, but we got to let you go. As it turns out, I did some illegal stuff. I'm not against that. I'm not above that either. Some white collar stuff. Who cares about that? Right. Stole some money. Moved some numbers around. Big deal. Everybody does it. Right. That's the way I thought. I thought there's criminals and there's me. Right. I'm serious. I went into court with 35 retail theft convictions. But I always thought with the judge, well, I'm a heroin addict, Your Honor. Like I had a reason. And these guys are just, I guess, bad people. I'll never forget a judge down the roundhouse. Maybe it was one of the things that woke me up, moment of clarity, whatever you call it, right? President's Weekend, 94. I'm looking at this guy. I'm shackled to like four other dudes who were real criminals. Like they'd done some bad stuff. I just robbed stores to get high. I mean, geez, that shouldn't even be illegal, really. Think about it, right? And I was in a record business. And they tell me, because it's President's Weekend, if you don't get called tonight, you're not. You're here till Tuesday. Well, yeah, that's like a life sentence for me. I'm sick. And I'm the last one called, and we go through all this. And I'll never forget this judge. He stopped me in the middle of what I was saying, and he said, can I ask you a question, son? I'm like, yes, Your Honor. He's like, did you rob that store? I was like, yes, Your Honor, because I never denied any of this stuff. He said, I got news for you, son. You're a common criminal. I was like, who knew? I never thought of it that way. Right? And I went home, and shortly after that, I asked my family for help. Corporal James C. Brennan, my mom had passed away. 30 years old, they booted me out of the Stock Exchange because I was introduced to the poppy at 30 years old. So that kind of changed things a little bit. I could get away with drinking a lot of drugs and stuff like that. But that's a different game if you're familiar with it and you need a lot of money and you can't work. That's the ground rules. So when you need a lot of money and you can't work, really, it's just not gonna work out too well. And that was really, I had no idea that was coming. And I went through almost five years of that. On the street, West Kensington. I was a kid from, I'm not a West Kensington guy, but apparently I am, right? And really bad. I asked my dad one day after I got out of this lockup this one time, I need help. I didn't even know what that meant. Never heard of AA. Never heard of anybody I knew that got sober in the family or anything like that. And he said, I don't know what to do for that, Chris. And I'm like, me neither. And he's like, I'm calling your sisters. I should have bailed out then. I usually do. And what came out of me is, you can call the Daily News, Dad. I can't live anymore. And they came over. I wasn't really paying attention, but my oldest sister at this point in her life was in the healthcare field. Who knew? She's on the phone. Ooh, I don't have any insurance. In that game, you're not big on keeping up insurance premiums or anything like that. So I had no insurance or anything. We had to go down and get me a welfare card, which, you know who I am. That was kind of embarrassing, but I did it. And then we liked it. My dad's like, can you get more food stamps? It was funny. A couple months later, after I got out of rehab. But my sister says, we got you on a waiting list. It's a inpatient, 28-day inpatient program. I was like, 28 days? Like, that's a month. I couldn't fathom, like, what am I going to do for a month? See, in my head, I equated everything with money. Let me get a job, get my you-know-what together, and I'll be fine. And maybe I would have been, who knows. But I was kind of beat up, and they knew it. And I went in, and I didn't relate to anybody in there. I didn't look like the other kids. I didn't feel like being in there. But best thing that ever happened to me, met some good people in there, met a man who's still my sponsor to this day, former Philadelphia policeman. Some of you guys know him, Bobby C. And there was something about him. Maybe it was because he was a neighborhood South Philly guy or something. Language of the heart. I don't know what it was. But it was like the hardest thing I ever had to do in my life. I asked him to sponsor me before I left there. I don't do that, especially with another man. And I did. And he laughed. And I got stepping stones. Bobby got sick, coincidentally, so I didn't see him right away. My first 8 months or whatever, there was not a lot of step work going on. There wasn't a lot of step work going on at meetings back then. Not that there is now. I'm not under that illusion either. But it was all a mystery. Yeah, you'll know. It works if you work it. And they meant well, but nobody knew, as it turns out. And it was all, nobody knew because... And then these guys, Joe and Charlie, came around. At least that was the first time I seen it. And they talked about studying that book. It's a textbook. You don't read it. I got that. I'm full of crap. I don't stop reading it. Study. I've been doing that for the last 26 and a half years. That's how I met Dave, a lot of these guys. It's an AA meeting, except having a goofy speaker like me, we read... Because we believe that book is divinely inspired, whatever the hell that means. I believe there's such a thing today. And there's something magical about it. We read no more than a paragraph, maybe. And you ready for this? Novel idea? You're allowed to share in real time. You can take notes. You can have a dictionary. Right? And somehow, when there's a few different people, not talking about how they're doing or different points of view, but when there's a few people reading from the same central piece, there's magic about it. I can't explain it to you. And that's been the answer to me. And I love that. I've been doing that ever since. And we started getting into that, have done it all over the place. And that's what I've been doing for all those years, just sitting with guys and taking them through the steps. I don't know, maybe that's dull or maybe I'm missing something. I don't know. But... it's kind of been a good deal. Got married a few years into it and moved over to Jersey. Can't get away from it, Pennsylvania, Jersey, Delaware, we were talking earlier. It's just, I should be in the mountains somewhere. I gotta get out west or something. I don't like anybody anymore. Maybe I'm just getting old and cranky. I don't know, but I can't do this. But I got AA and I love step work. I love this stuff. I can't explain it to you. Dave will tell you, it could be two guys or it could be a 200. And we start reading it and something happens beyond our understanding and control. And it just almost like lifts you up. And man, if you haven't tried it, give it a try. Bring an open mind. That's all we ask, right? Not my strong point, by the way. Right? I have an open mind as long as I agree with stuff. But as soon as it goes against me, bam. As it turns out, I'm closed real quickly. But read some other spiritual stuff. James Allen. There's a whole group of them. Google New Thought authors, because that was some of the. That's what they called. It was like a movement at that time in the 30s. New Thought authors, Oxford movement. There was. You Google, you get 50 names. Unbelievable stuff. Blew me away. I'm reading like a little pamphlet that I bought on Amazon for $1.99 that's probably 50 years old. Going, oh my God! It's me! Maybe I could have done that before. I don't know. But I'm the one that don't do that. And man, all of a sudden, I'm like, are you kidding me? Where has this been my whole life? And my wife will help remind me, you are an idiot. It's like the bounds of your stupidity are unbelievable. Because I just won't do it. I know. My sponsor said, if you answer, I know, to one more question, get a new sponsor. Because you know nothing about God. I want to hear your little sports facts or what a great... You could have been somebody on Wall Street, or maybe you could have been in major leagues and you got a few breaks. Maybe if I was like 6 inches taller or something, I'd be in the NBA or something. I don't know. But you see what I'm saying? Don't let this thing block you from really getting into what that's saying up on the wall up there. It can take you in just some really, really exciting and unbelievable areas that you weren't even expecting because you just think, well, I want to stay sober, but that's not really my stuff. When what you'll find out, there's really no such thing as staying sober, and this is all we got. I believe today, there's no such thing as staying sober. Show me in the book where it even says it. It says if you don't feed your spirit, you're going to die. Right? You're not going to be sober. And what do we tell? Oh, you got to play, blah, 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 blah. We spent millions of dollars on therapy and psychiatrists and psychologists, not that there's anything wrong with that. But at what point does that block off the spiritual help? Man, that blew me away. Right? So you're free to do all that. Don't get mad at me if you're doing that, like I'm against it or something like that. I don't care what you do, as long as you're trying to stay sober, be better, work, whatever it is you're doing in that head of yours. Maybe you think you're being better for your family, whatever. That's all good. But maybe the answer is a lot simpler than you realize. Right? What are you, Gnostics? Right? We talk about a higher power. Deep down inside every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. So what do you think? It's in everybody else, but it missed you? Right? Think about that one. But like, what are the odds? The whole world's wrong. A couple billion people. And you're right, and you're wearing a wristband from Friends Hospital or something. Or you got a curfew at 40 years old. Could it be you? They told me, could it be you? I never asked that question in my life. Could it be me? I never even thought to. I thought if I thought it, it must be right, boom, boom, boom. And just kept pushing my way at life. Could it be me? I'm wrong a lot, as it turns out. Sensitive, all kinds of defects. Never in my life did I look at me for any of that stuff. Right? But he also goes on to say, but you won't believe that because it's covered up by years of pride, lust, worship of other things, money, sex, power. I feel like Tony Montana every time I start getting into that. First you get the money, right? But you get the point, right? When you spend a whole life worshiping that stuff, of course you're not going to believe that power is inside you, right? But a little bit of step work, maybe the power is not out there that's going to come in here. And I think that holds a lot of us back. Maybe the power is already inside you, like the book says. And if the 12 steps, especially the middle steps, will remove on a daily basis what's blocking you from feeling it. And once you feel that, if you show other men and women how to do it, maybe one day at a time you can keep that feeling to some degree for the rest of your life. Or if you don't have it, you know how to get back to it. Nobody lives on a pink cloud, obviously, 24/7. But I know how to get back to it. Time out. Who knew? Just like the coach again, you get unlimited timeouts in life. Who knew? Apparently, you can use a timeout coming out of a timeout. Go get quiet. Don't fight with the people in work if you're angry or hungry or whatever. Don't take much from me, right? Boom. Timeout. Talk to God. I did it on Wall Street many years. I'd be like, please God, I want to rip this blank blank head off. Please calm me down. Show me how to be a service here. You're one I'm into. Blah, 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 blah. Constantly, constantly, constantly. And next thing you know, I walk into a meeting and I'm fine. Not only am I fine, I think I'm better than most of the people in there. Because they ain't doing this. Right? This is our gift. Alcoholism, drug addiction, nobody wants it. Oh my God, you see it on the news. They write stories about it. But what they don't understand, and it's a shame, and I believe this, I heard somebody say it years ago, but I believe it wholeheartedly. I believe it's a gift disguised as a curse. Right? Who else is going to be sitting, what's tonight, Monday? What church is this? We're sitting, like, normal. Where do normal people have their meetings? They don't. Maybe occasional church or something like that. I'll give you that. But we have this nightly, many times a day if you want, right? Working with each other. We're the lucky ones. Why? Because who else is scared enough to do this stuff and take it literally? You think unless you have to, you're going to look at the God question with any kind of seriousness? So I don't think normal people, God bless them, you're jealous of them, you don't want to be them, because I don't think they ever get spiritual at any kind of depth. But we do, because I'm so scared. Boom! I'm willing to read a book. I'm willing to listen to a speaker. I'm willing to go to a meeting. I'm willing to talk to other men and women. I'm willing to work with them. Are you kidding me? I would never trade it. I've done a lot of bad stuff. Still got some weird stuff happening. But what's the old NBA, right? I love this game, right? I wouldn't trade it for anything in the world. Right? It's a gift. If you're sitting here tonight, you got it by default. But you got to open it. You got to learn how to let it out of you. And next time, the first time maybe you're sitting with a man or woman and watching them do that little bobblehead and seeing that light come on and all of a sudden you're talking them off that spiritual ledge and you go home that night, then you'll know. You don't see God in yourself, but I can see God in other people, right? But when I remember the first couple times I did that, thank you, whatever I'm talking to. I get it. Thank you. And if you can just multiply that, the world is yours. Thank you.